He has to sit quietly. What a neat little space. Yeah. Let's just take a moment. Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Bhavitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Such a good boy.
Yeah.
It's so nice for me to have little big Shiva to have him here. Mm-hmm. It's so nice because my little Shweta's not here. But he's very happy at home. I didn't bring him so that this, we have this guy and these dogs here. It's really wonderful. And he's just happy now. Let's see how he does. So instead of having starting Tetra Bodha, we'll start Tetra Bodha maybe tomorrow to see how you're all doing. So everybody's rested and ready to really get into a text. So maybe we'll even have just meditation tomorrow morning, starting in the afternoon. I'll have to see how everybody's doing. So I thought I'll just talk a little bit how I'm envisioning the course. Since we have 3 months, we can do everything in more depth, spend more time. And that includes a really in-depth look at Nididhyasana, contemplation, inner child work, different meditative, I would say, techniques. I don't know what word to use, but they should just become that natural part of your life. I'm going to do a lot with you, and we'll do it in kind of in sections where we spend a lot of time on one given piece and keep moving, you know, back and forth, and we have a plan so that we can keep working on it. So today I want to talk a little bit, kind of introduce the whole idea of meditation, again, and why meditation as part of Antakarana Shuddhi, gaining that purity of mind, is so important. It's so important because we can actually have jnanam, have self-knowledge very clearly, and have the mind always recognize yourself. Always have the ahankara, that I notion, land on me, so it's not ahankara anymore. It's just the aham lands on me, on the self that I really am, on the self which is Brahman. It doesn't even have to land on me. Like, you don't have to have the ahankara land on your body all the time. Okay, I'm the body. That's absolutely not necessary because you know so well you're the body. Even though that's not true, you have, until you don't, you have jnana nishtha, you know. You have a deep resolve that you are this body, mind, sense organ, so that you don't have to think about that. You don't have to go around telling yourself that. Now, there's a very profound reason why you don't have to go around telling yourself that. And it's because yourself, the Atma, the self that you actually are, is self-evident. It doesn't need the body, mind, sense organs to be shining as me. If I got rid of the entire creation, in fact, in the Chandogya Upanishad, it says, you know, just roll it up, roll up the whole creation, including the body, mind, sense organs, this whole thing, like a dream, just roll it up and toss it to the side. You're fine. Nothing has happened to your being. There is no gain or loss of your me, of the sense of self that you are, ever, at any time. You are, in fact, absolutely timeless, and you don't have a you don't need a mind to be saying, oh, look at me, look at me. It's not required. Just like, even though you mistake yourself to be the body, you don't have to walk around saying, am I still here, am I still here, am I still here? Not necessary, because yourself is ever present on its and shining of its own accord. Yourself is the only thing that is like that. Nothing else is self-shining. We have two words for the self-shining nature of me, of my own being. Swaprakasha. I've used this many times. Swaprakasha. It means self-shining. Self-shining means I don't need someone to... I don't need a pramana, a means of knowledge to illumine me so that I can be known, experientially known. That's not our problem with self-ignorance. It's not that I need to gain an experience of myself. The self-experience is, the me is ever-present. Whether you take yourself to be the body or the mind or the sense organs, doesn't matter to yourself. You know, that's just a mistake on the part of the mind. It's totally irrelevant to your own sense of me. You don't require the creation. You don't require a body. You don't require sense organs. You don't require a mind. You don't require nothing else for the sense of me to be me. And so because of that, for yourself, for who you are and who you take yourself to be right now, as I am me, which happens to be this body, that's just a mistake. But the I am me, the self, this conscious being, that's not a mistake. So we're all 50% correct. 50% correct in the sense of my own presence, my own being. But that self-shining nature, we all call it Swetta Siddha. Swaprakasha, Swetta Siddha. Swetta Siddha, that means that I don't require a means of knowledge to establish myself. That siddha means to establish. I am self-established. Another, self-evident. Nothing else in the creation is self-evident. We use as an example for something self-evident as the sun. We use the sun as a drishtanta, an illustration for myself, myself being self-evident, like the sun is self-shining, self-evident. Means it doesn't have to have another sun come in and light it up. But the sun, ultimately, itself is not self-evident to me. Because say I am blind or my eyes are closed, I can't see the sun. The sun requires a pramana. It requires a means of knowledge to allow me to gain a thought modification, jnanavritti, of the sun, so that the conscious being that I am shines and illumines that sun. So the sun also isn't self-evident. It's just a good example for self-evident from its own standpoint, because it doesn't need another sun or another luminary to come and light it up. So in that way, my being doesn't need ever another luminary to come and light it up. Whether I have self-knowledge or self-ignorance really is totally irrelevant to my being, the conscious being I am. That's why whether you have knowledge or you're an ajnani, you don't Agnani in terms of self-knowledge. You have knowledge or you don't have self-knowledge. It's not a all of a sudden, I don't have self-knowledge, I don't have a self, I don't have a self. No. You have a self, you just yourself, you have yourself. You just take it to be the body, mind, sense organs, and then therefore you take yourself to be subject to death and subject to moodiness and all these things, and different from other bodies, right? So you become limited. And that's not a problem of your mind, of yourself, that's a problem of your mind. And it's not even a problem of your mind, it's Bhagavan's fault. I want to blame somebody, it's a Bhagavan. Because it's that ajnana, that self, that ignorance, as we say, beginningless. It's as beginningless as is the creation. For Ishwara standpoint, you know, the creation comes. From the standpoint of Ishwara, the sattva, sattva, rajas, and tamas, that reflecting principle, penetrates the entire infinite creation for Ishwara. So then the creation comes into manifestation, right? Then the whole creation is known, right? But not for the ones in the creation. The jivas are part and parcel of the creation, so they don't have a subtle body or a mind or sattva that from its own standpoint pervades the whole creation. One that pervades the whole creation is not identified with any given part of it. So if Maya, this is just for, we'll go into depth on this, just as a little quickie. When the Maya comes into manifestation, that's Brahman, the self, yourself, with the cyclical Maya that comes into manifestation. When it comes into manifestation, Swamiji will call it the manifestation of infinite knowledge. Because when you, whatever knowledge you have, when that comes, when that's manifest, it's either abiding there in the unconscious or in unmanifest condition. You know, like think of your living room at home. I'm sure you weren't thinking of it right now. But when I ask you to, you know, there it is. You know, if I ask you to think of your backyard, there it is as you say it. Any word, nama, word, any nama that you say is immediately connected with its rupa, nama rupa. Anything, any nama, any word is connected with its rupa, nama rupa. That's why they go together. This is going to be important when we look into meditation. So for you, any nama that you have is any knowledge that you have. When it comes manifest, the rupa or the accompanying image is going to be there. Swamiji will joke and say, if you say gagagabaga, then your mind kind of goes, you know, what is that? That's just now some sound. So that's a sound. I don't know what, it has a kind of ajnanam associated to it, you know. It's not knowledge. There's nothing associated, just a sound. But for it to be knowledge, the nama rupa is there, right? This is a law. If there's knowledge, it's either going to be abiding there in unmanifest condition or it comes into manifestation. The nama rupa. Imagine now when you gain self-knowledge, because the mind, your mind is the one that needs to gain self-knowledge, right? You're here. So when the student goes to the teacher and says, you know, in the Upanishads, Bhagavan, please, who am I? They're not talking about somebody out there. Who am I? What am I doing here? What is my purpose? What happens to me when I die? Is there anyone here that's free from sukha and dukkha, from pleasure and pain? Who am I, really? What happens to me when the body dies? They're talking, when the student comes to the teacher, they're talking about, who is this self? I don't know. So now think of it, even if you say the word Brahman, until you know what Brahman is, it's a sound that you have ignorance of the meaning. Right? So that's not knowledge. The nama itself is not knowledge. The nama and the rupa have to go together. That means the nama, the name, has to be associated with what it's a name of for there to be knowledge. And that association has to be very strong, very real. And that's when the association between the nama and the rupa, you know, nama is true to the rupa, true to the form, that's knowledge. When it's not true to the form, that's ajnanam. Now say it is true to the form. And then you say, you know the word Brahman because you've been taught. And that now Brahman has, you know, the associated, that nama has the associated rupa. Rupa doesn't have to be a form. Rupa means the image or the content of the nama. And so this relationship is very profound. Now, what if when I say myself, that's the nama. And the rupa that it is associated with may not be jnanam. It may be mithya jnanam. Right? And that's our problem. Mithya jnanam. I say myself, and now the rupa that the self is connected to is this body, mind, sense organs. And it has been connected to that body, mind, sense organs from beginningless time, whichever form you're taking. Yourself is always associated with that form because it's only Ishwara, right, that is not associated with any given form, but is simply the whole. Consciousness, the Satchitatma, which you are, the conscious being that you are, reflected in the entire infinite creation as a whole. You know, there's no ajnanam there. There's no limitation of any kind. That's Ishwara. But for all of us, who are like a wave in the ocean, we're part and parcel, our mind, body, mind, sense organs, is limited. It's a limited mind, limited sense organs, limited upadis. And so there is a natural, beginningless ignorance that is what we call avarana. It as though acts as a cover. It's not really a cover like putting a bag over your head. Yeah. But it's a cover because it stops you from, it stops the mind from recognizing the nature of yourself while at the same time having the complete non-dual experience of yourself. It has that completely. So when the difference between the mind, Brahman doesn't, yourself doesn't have to gain knowledge, right? The mind, the limited mind is what needs knowledge, not Brahman, not you. You are just simply are. We'll get into that more. But your mind is the one that has to gain the knowledge. It's the one that suffers from the ignorance. But when it gains that knowledge, you're not gaining knowledge of something, that, of a me that's not here. You're just gaining knowledge that the self that I always have been, always will be, that is the most intimately known to me, is actually free. Is actually Brahman, is actually timeless, is free from birth, is free from death, is the very self of the entire creation. That this self that I am is Ishwara, in fact, because Ishwara has no being apart from me. So I'm kind of talking now about things a lot of you know, just to bring us into what I want you to understand with Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana and working with these, the importance of meditation and this antakarana shuddhi, why it's so important. When you gain knowledge of yourself, you become a mumukshu. Means you become someone who desires liberation. And you have that correct question, like, I don't really know who I am. I don't know who Bhagawan is, or even if there is a Bhagawan. Who am I really? And this type of an inquiry for mumukshu, somebody who desires liberation, is very fundamental to who you are. It's not like, well, that's an interesting thought. Mm-hmm. But I talked to my mom when I was came back from India, and I was she wanted to know what I'd been doing, and I started to tell her. She said, oh, honey, I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. That's too much for me, she said, and she said other things too, but it's too much. She didn't care. She doesn't care because that's not her question. It hasn't arisen yet. But it will at some point. You know, and of course, infinite jivas, infinite minus one is still infinite, so we won't run out of jivas. But it will rise up. And when it rises up, then the question is really, and this is something we miss, especially in the West, this the who am I question. It doesn't really land on who am I. this person who stands before you, who am I really? Because we've been conditioned to think that there's some infinite being out there who's shining bliss, that somehow we have to come into a relationship with in order to know it. Do you understand that? Otherwise, we don't think, oh, who am I? And then this knowledge takes place and I recognize the self that has always been here. We don't think like that. We don't think like that because the self is the only thing that is self-evident and self-shining. There's nothing else like that. Everything else in the creation, and so this is all we know really, is that to know something in this creation, it's not self-shining. You need a means of knowledge to illumine that thing, like your sense organs or your mind going on meditative travel or whatever. You need your mind to land on that thing so that object forms a vritti, a thought modification in your mind, and then I know that. Right? And then this consciousness illumines that. But I always think that I have to have a means of knowledge that will give me the vritti, the thought modification, to know. So consciousness has to illumine the object of knowledge. It's like that for us in everything. Even your imagination is something that needs to be illumined. For I may have all kinds of imaginings going on inside. As Jung will say, there's a dream river going on continually. But for that to be known to you, you have to have a vritti, a thought modification, which consciousness illumines. Right? Everybody see? That's really important, because since that's how I know knowledge to take place, since that's how I know it, then when I think of gaining self-knowledge, you know, who am I missing? Where's that woman from India?
Yeah.
Where is she?
I can go and look.
No, that's all right. She'll have to listen to the tape. But she must be somewhere.
I saw her walk by and back to her room. Just maybe she didn't know that there's class.
You better go get her.
Yeah.
I'll just circle around what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's all right, because sure, I just heard this many times. Swamiji often, when he starts a course, even. That's really funny. When I realized she wasn't here, that reminds me so much of Swamiji. Do you remember? And Swamiji would be sitting with him. There'd be his huge class, 60, 70 people in the class, and he'd be talking, all of a sudden he'd go, and then he'd search the whole room. Where is so and so? Yeah. That's how it is. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. So this orientation, you have to listen to the first part of the tape.
Okay.
After class, you listen. So, you have to sit down. Okay. Just talking how knowledge takes place, why this is so important. We are only used to gaining knowledge by having a thought modification given to us by our means of knowledge, that we have a vritti, then that vritti, any vritti, because it's sattva, takes place in consciousness, and so it is known. And so when we're gaining self-knowledge, we require, we think, this vritti in order to have an experience of the self, which then we know. But this is not the case in this situation only. That's why we have to teach so much about how knowledge takes place in terms of self-knowledge. Because we don't know that. We only know how to gain a thought modification through the use of a pramana, and then we know this thing that we didn't know before. Right? But here, in terms of self-knowledge, you are already completely present. And so it's not at all about gaining a new experience of yourself. You are already here, right? You're already here. And so how am I going to gain an experience of an experience I'm already having, right? The self-experience is already completely present as me, whether you have self-knowledge or you don't have self-knowledge. And so that means that actually we have a technical term for what it means to gain self-knowledge. It's not the gain of a new experience or the gain of an experience. It's called ajnana nivritti. Ajnana nivritti means the elimination, the removal of ajnana, the removal of ignorance. Right? The removal of ignorance, just what that does for my mind, so the removal of the ignorance that is in the mind in reference to my own being, what that does, the removal of that ignorance, it gives me what we call a viveka, a discrimination between my being that is ever present and always has been and always has been me. Now that mind gains a viveka, a discriminative knowledge between me and the mind and all of the vrittis that are coming and going. So what I recognize now is that no matter what vrittis, no matter what thought modifications are coming and going, I'm still here, like I always have been. Except now I recognize the independent nature of me, that all emotions, all feelings, all reactions, all perceptions, any vritti, any thought modification that is taking place in the mind is illumined by me. They come and go, I don't. That's a fact. These are all facts. That's why Vedanta is revealing facts to the mind, which has not had a means of knowledge that would allow it to see that. The mistake, the ajnanam, it's not a mistake on the part of the mind. It's an inborn, innate mistake called superimposition, really, anyonya adhyasa. It's called a superimposition that takes place naturally on the part of the mind, because the mind, being sattva, reflecting consciousness naturally, because it's reflecting consciousness all the time. Imagine your mind having a thought, no consciousness there. Imagine having a thought, but you're not there. You can't even imagine it. Every thought, every experience that you have, you are there. Not somebody else. So this thought is different than this thought, is different than this thought. But you don't say, now I've come, now this other person has come, now this other person has come. Oh, there's so many people that just kept going. We have no such idea. This thought, but look at what happens. This thought comes and goes. I don't think I'm coming and going. The next thought comes and goes, I'm coming and going. It never even occurs to me. I'm always me. I'm the one who is there, present to every thought. But that language requires viveka. If I say, I am there, present to every thought, I am the stable one, I'm never coming and going. If you recognize the one who stays and is not coming and going, and recognizing the thought as a thought, there's viveka there. There's discrimination there. There's knowledge. It's called viveka jnanam. So much of Vedanta is viveka jnanam, that discrimination between me, the one who is always here, and all these experiences that come and go. Okay, so now, to get back, we'll be circling around these things in many ways. So anyway, we're stuck with the situation until we gain knowledge. Because how can the mind gain knowledge of that? Because its experience is very thoroughly, whatever thought is there, I am there. Why would it think I am not the self? It just takes that for granted. Of course, I am the happy self. I am the unhappy self. I am the miserable self. I am the calm self. You know, I am the one who is seeing this. I am the one who is seeing this. I am the one who is thinking this. Because the mind always enjoys me as the conscious being, really, you know, which totally, and from the standpoint of the mind is never away from that. So naturally, there's what we call an anyonya adyasa, a mutual superimposition on the part of the mind. What we mean that mutual superimposition, what we mean is that the mind, first of all, it takes itself to be me, right? So the mind becomes the conscious being. I am the conscious being. And the other thing is it takes me, the conscious being, to be moody and to be young or old, or to be healthy or sick. Whatever happens to be the qualities that the body, mind, sense organs are enjoying at that time, it takes itself to be that. Taking itself to be me, then, of course, myself, gains all of these attributes of the body, mind, sense organs. That's the mutual. Taking, because it's not mutual in the self sense that the mind takes itself to be me, so then the self takes itself to have all of these qualities. Self is free. It's different from the mind. It's the luminary, the one because of which the mind is known, the one because of which the mind exists. It is not making a mistake. The ajnanam, the self-ignorance, belongs only to the upadhi. It belongs to maya. It belongs to this infinite creation that we find ourselves in. From Ishwara's standpoint, no problem. The shastra will say this maya is something which is beginningless and has for its adhishtana. Adhishtana means for its truth, for its being, the self. So we would say this whole maya has no being apart from the satchitatma, from the self, from this infinite self. And so this maya is something that comes into manifestation, Ishwara. It comes into manifestation, Ishwara, because this, from the standpoint of the whole creation, this infinite creation is a conscious being. It's like an infinite mind, Ishwara. But everything within Ishwara, especially all the ones that have, all the parts that have subtle bodies, they're all jivas. The jivas are like the waves in the ocean of Ishwara. And those jivas are all subject to limitation. Right? Limited body, mind, sense organs. And so their experience, even though they are only Ishwara, like the waves are, a wave can't say, let the ocean be, I am me, I have nothing to do with it. Yeah. That's how, you know, that way we feel that when we don't say it in such a gross way. There's me and there's the creation and I'm walking through it. I'm walking through and trying to carve out my life out of this infinite creation. So there's me and there's this creation. That's actually not true. There's this creation and you're part of it. It's like, think of a dream character. A dream character might say, there's me, I'm here in this creation trying to make my life. And the dream, they need a dream guru that'll say, make them realize, you know, actually, you are part and parcel of this creation. You're like a cell in the body, you know. You have no independence whatsoever. You're part and parcel of this creation. There's nothing about you that is different. It's like trying to tell the wave, listen, you're part and parcel of the ocean. You're subject to the laws of the entire ocean. The ocean is taking care of you. You're not taking care of the ocean, right? Oh, wave. The laws are much greater than you. If you want to go forward toward the shore, you need the ocean to participate in that activity. The laws of the ocean have to be going toward the shore, and you will go. But what if the tide is coming back? Then you'll find yourself, you know, going the other way. Because you are the ocean. You are the ocean. We have to say, just to make it clear, you are part and parcel of the ocean. But the ocean would just say, you're me. There's nothing here that is not me. Okay? So that knowledge is from Ishvara. You, us, as jivas, have to recognize the truth of that. It is not a given because of the limitation of the upadi. Upadi means this body, mind, sense, everything. That is not a given. But at some point your mind says, who am I? What is really going on? Who is Ishvara? Why am I here? What is the purpose of all of this? And then you become a mumukshu, and then we have these Upanishads. Mm-hmm. The Upanishads are not books. They didn't have books. We have them in books. In fact, in Kali Yuga Purana, it says this horrible thing has happened. All of our knowledge has been put in books, on the shelves. It's all sitting there on the shelf. With knowledge, the knowledge is supposed to be something that is alive and well in our minds. And the whole teaching tradition, the Guru Sisha tradition, is a flow, is a river of that knowledge, you know, that's taking place in us, not in a book. And it has to take place. It has to take place in this Guru Sisha Parampara, in this teaching methodology. Because we're ignorant of anything that cannot be objectified by our pramanas, by our means of knowledge. So say, even if you read the Upanishad, you read it, you know, and it's saying all these things, but you're defining all the words that you read by the objects of knowledge that you know. Either you're defining the words like infinite or consciousness or existence or being or maya, even this word, you know. We have all our own definitions of this, and so we get this kind of weird mithyajnanam because our minds have not been taken out of the box. So how are they going to get out of the box? You don't have any means of knowledge to do that. We're trapped within samsara. We're trapped within the creation. The only one that can get us out of the box is Bhagavan, really, is Ishvara. So this knowledge either exists in the creation or it doesn't. But of course it exists in the creation, because creation is like an infinite mind. The truth of the whole thing is here. And so it manifests in the minds of the rishis in whatever way the Upanishads tells, the story it tells, so that it's available to us when we want it. We don't always want it. When you want it, though, the law is, and within the Upanishads, is that when you want it, when you're a mumukshu, then you will get it. Just because you're not wearing the pramana, you're not wearing the Upanishad pramana, you know, as another sense organ that you're born with. You're not wearing that with you all the time because you don't need it. You don't need it before and you don't need it after. You need it when you need it. So, to bring this back, you see how I'm doing. Okay, good. To bring this back to Nama Rupa and the importance of this Antakarana Shuddhi, gaining the mind that is actually able to get this knowledge. Why that's so important, why it's considered the second, what do you call, like a pratipaksha, it's like the second wing, if I can, we have pratipaksha bhavana, I'll talk about that later, the second wing. You have upayanishta. You have upayanishta, you need to be subjected thoroughly to this means of knowledge. That's the guru-sisha relationship. That teaching takes place in a live setting where the pramana is being wielded, the means of knowledge is being wielded, so that you can get out of the box, so that your mind can recognize what is already there to be seen. And so that teaching, shravana, manana, nididhyasana, shravana is the wielding of the pramana, and so then a lot of clarity has to take place there with this knowledge, removing any doubts in terms of what this knowledge is actually unfolding for you. You have to have clarity there. But then there's manana. The mind is, you know, tenacious. The mind wants to know. And so any doubt that it has, like it can kind of be very clear on what the Upanishads actually says, but say, but then another little part of the mind will come up and say, yeah, the Upanishads do say that, I understand, but why couldn't it be like this? Why couldn't there just be many non-dual atmas? You know? Or why isn't it really these experiences, why aren't they just a product of the brain? You say this, but why not? Why aren't they a product of the brain? These are actually good questions. They're important, very important questions. Because otherwise the Upanishads and the knowledge is just a belief. You understand it well. It's like, say, you study a text and you understand it very well. You can be like a pundit, understanding very well what the Upanishads are saying. You've been well taught. But you haven't put it to the test. So all questions that we have in reference to what the Upanishads are saying and why couldn't it be this way, those all have to be resolved. And they have to, that's your responsibility. Because the teacher isn't always going to know what questions you have. That's why the teaching methodology, the Upanishads themselves are, and the whole of the guru, the teacher has been through so much teaching, if they're able to wield this, that all the questions they had, all the questions that the Upanishads themselves bring up, all the questions that your teacher had, all of those have been looked at so that those probably in the teaching itself are answered. I used to experience this with Swamiji all the time. He would be talking and he'd say something and my mind would just go, you know. But the next thing he would say would resolve it. Okay, that's okay. Then you'd go to the next and I would have a question, but then the next thing he would say would resolve it. Many, many times. But sometimes it wouldn't get resolved. And so then I would be like this. You know. And I would follow him to satsang after the class and say, Swamiji, what about this? And, you know, and then he would always vary for everyone. I'm just one example of everybody. He would sit there and go through it with you and show this and that. You would ask your questions. And either at some point you'd go, oh, okay, I see. But sometimes it would be, you still didn't get it. And then he'd finally go, don't worry. It'll come, don't worry, you know. And so then you were put on hold for a while. But that question has to be resolved. It's your question. It has to be resolved. And you can't pretend that it's resolved. You can't say, oh, we'll just have this one be resolved. Let's just pack this one away for a while. The mind isn't like that. The mind wants to know. It wants to understand. And so that resolution of all of these questions is important for us. It's a part of the teaching, either Shravana or Manana, you know, resolving the things, why couldn't it be this way, or what does the Upanishad actually say? And it's not intellectually, it's all definitely involves your intellect, but it's talking and pointing to something that is actually here to be recognized. So it's not just an intellectual, it's something that actually exists here in this, as this universe, or exists here as my body or my mind or sensors. I have to see it and go, whoa, you recognize the fact of it. And so until the fact of it is recognized, it just abides as a belief. So we have to have that, what we call, Swamiji calls bravery. You have to be brave. Like, what if I have a question that can't be answered? Swamiji once said, if there's a question that can't be answered, or that you can negate the vision that the Upanishads are giving you, if you can negate it to me, I will let the whole thing go and move on. That's the bravery, you know. You can't be afraid of your questions. If the Upanishads, if the Vedanta can't hold your questions, then just let it go and we'll all walk out of here with you. Really, that's how he talks. But it's true, you know. The truth is the truth. What does truth mean? Truth means that the nama is true to the rupa, that they are one, right? that the knowledge, that's the knowledge, has to be true to the object of knowledge, whatever that is. If it's not true to it, it's called mithyajnanam. It's a false knowledge. It's a false concept. And that will be crushed. The universe will crush it because it's not true. So this upaya nishta, shravana, manana, and the third one is nididhyasana. Nididhyasana is, now this is our problem. Why do we even need nididhyasana when you're always here? The mind is here, the creation here. Well, it is because from beginningless time, your mind has habitually taken yourself to be this body, mind, sense organs, to be finite, to be subject to death, and for your ananda, your fullness, your wholeness, to be dependent upon your getting your way. I need this to be happy. That's what those ragas are there. I have to have this to be happy. And I have to get rid of this to be happy. And it's subtle. It pervades your whole mind and your whole unconscious. It's like this big basket of ajnanam, you know, that goes deep. It's in reference to the universe that I perceive out here, and it's in reference to the unconscious also. You know, these kind of timeless, not timeless, but beginningless notions that are caused from beginningless time because of the nature of you as a jiva, you know, being a limited entity as part and parcel of Ishwara, but your experience is, I am just this body, mind, sense organs walking around in this world. That's what it is. And so it leaves us with what we call, for all of us, a dehatma buddhi, naturally, from beginningless time. Dehatma buddhi means my mind takes my atma, the atma, the self, to be the body, body, mind, sense organs, from beginningless time, because that's the experience of the mind. So this knowledge comes along, and the mind sees it, but then this ocean of ajnanam has to keep rising up into the one who has knowledge. And then the one who has knowledge has to be with this reaction, with this emotion, with this desire, with this way of behaving in the world that is totally opposite, you know, to what you know and to who you are. So that problem is handled by nididhyasana, contemplation. So the nididhyasana is not a contemplation in order to have an experience. It's a sitting with your knowledge so that the mind can get used to just being it. The mind, the body can be the body, the mind can be the mind, the experiences can be the experiences, and I can be me. And so I keep bringing my mind back to the self that I know. That's nididhyasana. We do never can use nididhyasana meditation in order to discover the self. It's not a means of knowledge for yourself, because yourself is already here. So then you're meditating out of ignorance. I have to have an experience of myself. I have to have an experience of myself. We all come to this knowledge with that. Let me have an experience of myself, because that's how we know. That's how we know to gain knowledge. We have to have the experience. We have to gain an experience that's not yet here. The experience is here already. So we have to have recognized myself, and then I can meditate, means be with myself. That's nididhyasana in its purest form. But in the Mandukya Upanishad, Gaudapada gets four Pratibandhaka's obstructions to nididhyasana. One of them is, okay, you go, you sit down and you relax and close your eyes. But, you know, it's sometimes in class, all of a sudden you hear someone go, one time that was happening just recently. I think Edward was really, really tired. I did, okay. Oh, he's sending him this tonight. So he's always just so alert, you know, he's exhausted. He says, and so what? And wake him up. So what they say, when you fall asleep, what do you do? You just go like this. No, that's not good enough, because you'll just fall asleep again. So you have to get up, walk around, you know, put some cold water in your face, shake out or something, and then sit back down. But what he says, and what Swamiji always says, you can't just sit down and let yourself fall asleep, because it does feel kind of nice, and you just go asleep and you're gone. No, because then you're giving a message to the mind, you know, that when my mind becomes quiet, oh, that's going to sleep, okay. You're setting up that. So you don't do that. You also don't meditate when you're lying down. For the same exact reason. Lying down, shutting your eyes, you fall asleep. So you don't want that kind of a samskara or a habit. So that's one thing. Another thing is what we call vikshepa. The mind's really agitated. Well, that vikshepa, the reason for those agitations and how to handle them, we use different techniques like pranayama or japa, or different techniques to kind of put a band-aid over that vikshepa, that agitation for the time, just to quiet it for the time. We have to go deeper than that to really get rid of it. But when you're meditating, you can do pranayama, and, you know, japa and different things and ways of being with it, just from the Upanishads, to silence it. The third one is when your mind is quiet and absorbed, it gets to be kind of blissful and really, really happy, and then your mind will go, oh, wow, this is just what I wanted. This is just so nice. I hope I could have this all the time. Then your mind it comes out of that. So you have to just be. You have to let that go. The fourth one is where the upayanishta comes in, the antakarna shuddhi, in terms of the unconscious. They just say, for the what they call kashayas, when you're sitting in meditation, all kinds of things will bubble up. Emotions, hurts, you know, fears, traumas, memories, all kinds of things will bubble up and can overwhelm. They don't say that, but it's true. But all they say is things will bubble up. And what do you do when these little bubbles? What do you do in these little bubbles? What do you do with those little bubbles? You know, you just let them go. Let those bubbles come up and you let them go. So sitting there, oh, you think, oh, here comes a little bubble. Let it go. Here comes a little bubble. But you know what happens with us? We're in Kali Yuga now, you know. We're sitting there quietly. And all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden this huge tidal wave. Now, what bubble? This tidal wave comes in and totally overwhelms your mind, and these thought flows, you know, like a volcano coming out, like all of that. What do I do? You know? And so, this modern day kashayas, you know, we are full to the brim with these things. And so, you know, we have to be with those in a different way now. Swamiji also realized that. He used to think, you know, this was in the early 70s. And he, first of all, he just noticed it, but he didn't think much about it. But then he said, what's going on with my students, especially the Western students? But the Indian students will write, no, it's us too, it's us too. Kali Yuga for them too. You think, what is going on? Because his teaching was, the first several years, so pure. It was so pure. It was like, you are here, you are mumukshus, I am teaching so clearly. He had total confidence in his teaching, rightly so, to have so always for his whole life, the clarity and the use of the pramana, you know. Once he understood that, it was so unbelievably amazing. He would think, why aren't they getting it? Why are they still sad? Why are they still unhappy? Why isn't this taking root? And he used to, at that time, before he really started to think about it, when he would talk about psychology, it was just, he had no use for it whatsoever. This is all you need. This is it. And you know what? This is all you need in terms of gaining the self-knowledge. And even having the viveka, and we're going back to the beginning of the talk now, even having the viveka between you and the mind and the vrittis that are there, your self-knowledge can actually allow you to just let these vrittis be, let these emotions be. Like Swami, our Swami Vagishananda Swamiji will say, it's just the weather. This is the weather, you know. So it's pouring out. So it's a thunderstorm. That's the weather. That takes viveka. And you can have that viveka. You can have it. And there can be all kinds of thunderstorms and things going on internally. All kinds of hurts and pains. But you know what? You can do that for sure. And that is very, very beautiful, because no matter what is going on, you are there. That viveka is there, and so your being is not in a thunderstorm. Yeah? Your being is not upset. The mind is upset, and there's a viveka between the two. That's a jnana nishtha. You can't say to yourself, or your guru would never say, that you don't have knowledge. Because you have knowledge. The mind is nitya. It's doing what it does. You definitely have knowledge. But you know what? The mind isn't happy with that. I could also say, like, say I broke my arm, you know. It's broken. It's okay. It's just mithya. Yeah. It's really excruciatingly painful. But it's just mithya after all. And I know, I recognize myself, I'm not in any pain. Me. Of course, my arm is so extraordinarily painful. But, you know. It's okay, you still have knowledge. You have knowledge, and that's true also. That is true. But your arm's not happy with that. You know? Okay. And what to speak of your mind. When you have issues in your mind that are producing pain, even though yourself is shining, truly, the viveka is there. The one who is not in pain is there, being really the adhishtana, or the container, or the sanctuary for that pain. That pain is still there. And it is very natural for the body, as well as for the mind, to want to heal that pain. And so that pain, we want to heal, you know, so that the mind can go back to its natural, normal condition. Its normal condition is just really shanti, is a peace, is well-being. Its natural condition is mirrors your own being. And to the degree that you can cure the wounds, the physical wounds, which, you know, some of us have illnesses and whatnot, and we're not able to cure them, but we cure what we can. We don't say, oh, you just be in pain, just be in pain. We cure what we can. And then what can't be cured, then we hold that in a way that we learn how to handle it. Because we can't eliminate it. It's a pain that you're not able to eliminate. So you have to live with it. Part of our prarabdha. Emotional, mental pain also is like that. So much of it we can resolve. They're not little bubbles anymore. The little bubbles we can resolve easily. It's easily. Just let them go. Shama. It comes through in the mind. You just let it go. You don't even need to engage with it. You just let them come. Give them a blessing. Welcome them to be there and allow them to go. Don't hang on. We can do so much. You know. But there are, in our era, a lot of Bhagawan has given us the tools as we need them to be able to handle the traumas and hurts and things that we have grown up with, you know, that cause a lot of pain or are kind of thwart us in terms of our normal relationships with others and in the world, that stop us from just being able to be objective. You know, like somebody's in trouble, somebody's angry with you or something, how that you can just care about them and be objective and give them the space to be as they are, to be able to handle the things in your own mind as they come up, you know, in a way that cures them. or that diffuses them. We have to learn all of these things. The bubbles aren't, letting the bubbles go are not enough for us. And so now for us to gain knowledge, we have to not only gain the, what we call it, which is the actually what is moksha, is the recognition of my own freedom. But the secondary gain of that moksha, which is just self-knowledge, is the mind's sense of freedom, sense of tremendous freedom in its recognition of the self. So to do that, we have to understand first how to cure all of these issues that we have, really transform them, and then how to live with the ones that we can't transform. You know. But all of the techniques and all of the methodologies for transforming and really deeply changing these things become really important. Right? So before we, I'm going to wind up here so we can start this meditation tomorrow, but I want to just give you a little precursor for what we're going to be doing. You're unconscious when we do the inner child work, or we're, you know, talking to wisdom figures or all of these different devices that we have. Your unconscious is in the form primarily of images and affect. It thinks in images. On this level, we have language, but the language of the psyche is in images and affect. A dream is a communication. It's a communication, though, with images and affect primarily, right? And so those images, when you take a trauma, when you have a trauma, like when you're a little girl, a trauma takes place, your dad did something. I'll tell you about one of my traumas and how I was able to really help it. So nice. These traumas are held inside as images with affect. That's what the defense system does, especially when you're younger. Takes it in, the image and the affect. The affect is usually, and the image is usually in terms of a dyad, like mother, child, father, child, you know, son, whatever it is, it's taken in there. So that image is there, and it's loaded with affect. And then as we experience things out here, it gets triggered. So then the affect just overwhelms your mind. And then you're reliving that in the present. So what we have to be able to do, well, inner child work, is being able to go in. Now you, the adult, the buddhi, to be able to go in and actually be with that image and have to have dialogue with it and to start to transform it. That's only one thing, though. There are many different things that become kind of like our little toolbox, our knowledge of how to be with these unconscious hurts and problems and things that actually limit our expression, the natural expression of the mind when it's not in, you know, subject to that self-ignorance. In the mind, when it's not subject to self-ignorance, is immediate, you know, it immediately is just a response from myself, from the Atma. I say in buddhi, is it? It's a response from the self, not from your anger. So what has to happen with our knowledge is our buddhi becomes a response from the self, and then that buddhi can respond to, you know, the deeper mind, the intellect, it can respond to all of the problems that we have externally and internally. And learning and responding to these problems externally and internally, a lot of it we do initially internally. We do it externally too, but we do it internally because that's where they all are. There aren't really any problems out here. We're the problem. That's good because we can do something about it. You can't really do that much about other people. You have to, Swamiji, will you please just give them their space? Let them be. They're not always going to be happy. Not everybody is going to like you. Let it be. Give them their space to be. Give others their space to be. Mm-hmm. I can't do that, Swamiji. Don't take them inside. I'm not trying to take them inside. I just do. They have to learn. They have to learn all that, you know, so that the mind can have that strength, and then the mind becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Even in reference to your knowledge, it becomes stronger and stronger. Where it just loves to be with yourself, and it doesn't want to have any issues. It's not worth it. But also, at first, it has to know how to be with all those issues. So we have all. So this, what I'm saying is this: upayanishta, taking care of the mind, taking care of our values and all of that, is so important because your mind wants that. You're always fine, you know. And that's a great, that makes all of taking care of all of this possible, because you're always fine. And with your knowledge, you know that your ananda isn't out here anyway to be gained by, you know, if I could just have this, then I'll be happy. If I could just have little Shiva stay with me, that would be great. But that has to be a non-binding desire, definitely a desire. But, but it's got to be non-binding. It has to be non-binding, so that if he doesn't come and doesn't stay with you, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Everything has to be like that. You have your desires, you have your loves and preferences and all that, but it's okay. This is fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a lot more to talk about. But we have 3 months. Turn all these off right away so we don't have to edit them.